Next item of business is change of zone number 1697, Land Tech Receiver Services, LLC.
Mr. Chairman, a couple things on this, if the commission would bear with me a second. A couple points I'd like to make. I guess the first is a question for Lawrence. Mr. Abbott had a misunderstanding of the conditions that they proposed. I think he misstated what it was, whether it was an and or whether it was an or situation. But he raised a point about not knowing what was before the commission. How was it advertised?
Well, he was referencing what Jim submitted tonight.
Right, but
it was advertised just like it's written in the second page of the minutes, and it's basically an application, blah, 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 to amend, to extend the time to construct and open for use the golf clubhouse and nature center facilities without reading all the other.
Okay, right. So
that's what was advertised.
There was not then a proposed replacement condition that was advertised. There was just
what was advertised.
Okay. I just wanted to make sure we didn't have an advertisement problem where it was materially different from what had been advertised.
I know, and
I just wanted to make sure that what Fuquay had submitted wasn't different from what had been advertised, because then we would have had
one of the difficulties I had with that was that Mr. Fuquay also submitted something that we did send it out, but let me see. He submitted one on I got two or three letters. On the 12th, he gave us the booklet. And on the 12th. Yeah, that's right. 12th was the booklet, right? On the 18th, he just today gave us the amended version. And there was another type version that was submitted in the file that's a shorter version and didn't include ABC.
Okay.
It was A and B. He added C and D today. And I haven't compared them. I passed out all my copies for the ABCD.
Yeah. Okay.
So I may need to get one of those back. But what he submitted with this document originally a week or so ago. I forget the date now. But it's only A and B.
Because we can't have an ordinance that's been advertised and then discuss something that's materially different from what's been advertised.
This is proposed amended condition number 10, and this would be the action that could be taken by the commission, I think.
Okay.
But the way it was advertised, like I said, was just for purpose of to extend.
Right, okay.
Construction.
Second point I'd...
Is it the attorney's job to put the motion? I mean, is forward? What he gave tonight, A, B, and C, is that...
Well, typically, if it was an RPC that came in from scratch, it would be advertised as a change in zone for an application to amend the zoning from AR1 to a GRRPC, period, and you'd have a property description. Then you get to the hearing, and the applicant would submit proposed conditions, which the county would either accept or maybe create its own. You know, so that's not any different. I just wanted to make sure that the county didn't advertise a proposed condition. They advertised that they're seeking to amend the condition, but they didn't say,
right,
this is what the amendment is going to be.
And this was actually, I told Mr. Fuquay to show us how he wanted it advertised and typed,
mm-hmm.
And that was from his writing.
Okay.
This is mine, but that's from his writing.
Yeah.
And then I had to put in all the whereases from existing, the two previous applications to get the dates and all in. And then I had to add the new dates for receipt of and the blanks for the public hearing tonight and blanks for public hearing of council. So they end up with a, and then here it is. The ordinance says what was advertised, the ordinance that was prepared for council shows A and B. Doesn't show C and D, shows A and B.
We might have to look at that.
Yes, you have to come in. I'll pass down a copy so you have it up front, but this is what he submitted here with his application.
What was advertised? Was it?
The only thing advertised is the title of the.
Was the title?
The only thing gets advertised is the title.
Okay,
yeah.
All right.
It doesn't include the full text of the document.
Okay, that's what I want to make sure. All right.
Yeah. What we did accept was proposed conditions, which
we typically do.
All
yeah,
time.
Right.
So
they could be conditioned if they weren't part of the.
It's just what I was worried about. It's a little bit different because we have proposed conditions to amend prior conditions, not ones from scratch. And I just wanted to make sure we didn't have any
As it pertains to the argument, I don't know that it's that important. I mean, I'm more concerned, Vince, about, I mean, the opposition attorney, Mr. Abbott, stated that Wells Fargo basically are lot owners. But the original developer never had a commitment in lot ownership as far as paying dues. So what's the difference where the owners change? The original developer never had a commitment to pay membership dues because he owned the entire development. So why would the bank, even if it took it outside of receivership, foreclosed on it? Or are they treated any, they're not individual lot owners any more than the original developer?
I don't know that for sure without looking at the restrictive covenants. Sometimes it depends, and they're all different, you know, that, and particularly, I suppose you could even look under the new Decoya law, you know, for common ownership developments like this. But the developer typically sets it up that they don't pay assessments while they still own lots. They just make up the difference in operating costs between what the assessments bring in and what it costs to run the place. You know, we're not usually talking about the peninsula scale of things, but that's usually the way it works. So I don't know that there's really, I suppose, not in the way that Mr. Abbott talked about it, but if they had to build a clubhouse, it's not really pro rata. You know, they would still establish whatever the dues would be for the lot owners, and they'd just look to really whoever owned the rest of the lots to make up the difference. You know, it's not like everybody's got to pay the same amount proportionally in dues. It's just not going to be set up that way, which is what you're saying. The other thing...
Nor the principal owner of the development is, if he was exempted, anybody that bought the development would assume that exemption.
I assume he was exempted. I can't say that because some developers make it that they're not exempted. They got to pay dues on constructed units.
I mean, apparently they weren't paying that dues at the outset. They reached the threshold to build the clubhouse, they didn't start paying those dues.
They weren't paying anything.
Anything.
I mean, they weren't paying the county.
I just want to know the, you know.
And they were using escrow funds.
Attorneys get paid to do what they get paid to do. Yeah. That's cool. I understand that. But I don't understand the linkage or the validity of that argument. And I just want
of Mr. Abbott's argument?
Yeah. In my mind, I just don't see the validity of that, and I'm asking you, you know, am I missing something there?
No, I think that's true, and the other thing is it really cuts right through it is, whether it was strategically or whatever for this purpose, Wells Fargo, or neither Wells Fargo nor Wachovia owned the lots at all. I mean, it's still Sandler Foods or whoever the corporation was that developed the thing. I mean, Wachovia, as he said, didn't foreclose, so they aren't the record title owner of the lots, so they don't have any obligation to pay any assessments or memberships for any of those lots. Chose to do that. So, yeah, there's...
Plus it's in the covenants.
Well, no, Wachovia, they don't own anything. I mean, they're at this point, the bank that has a mortgage that's not being paid, that Sandler or whoever owns, you know, or owes. So, I mean, there's some flaws in that logic.
And I suppose, you know, this goes to council as well, and, you know, Mr. Abbott would have that time and opportunity to approach the homeowners that he thinks have been hoodwinked and convince them that he's right, I suppose. He has that opportunity to do that.
Well, then the third thing I think that's important in all this, though, and it's why I asked so many questions about that escrow agreement, you know, Mr. Fuqua said that that'll never occur. Well, if we're here, it's occurred, you know? I mean, they didn't build a clubhouse.
I think it's quite likely to occur that, you know, they won't reach that threshold at least for some time. Yeah.
The concern I have is that the prior ordinance that Mr. Johnson made a motion on 2 years ago or whatever required there to be a bond that was for the benefit of the county, where the county could go out and collect that to build the thing, which the county doesn't want to have to do, believe me, but it's there if they needed to. That was never submitted, although it was a requirement. The RPC ordinance says that it's not a mandatory thing, but the county may require performance guarantees for completion of any amenities and any kind of development. You know, in this case, we've got an escrow agreement that they're trying to get to replace that bond that runs to the county's benefit, but this escrow agreement doesn't run to the county. I think we ought to see what that agreement says, make sure it does what they say it does, and if you're inclined to approve this, maybe make a recommendation that there, if necessary, be some modifications to that agreement to make sure that it protects, if not the county, the members and residents of the peninsula. You know, I mean,
One thing you referenced before when you were talking about the dollars and cents of the whole thing, if you go into a lot of deed restrictions, on a deed restriction song, a lot of deed restrictions say you got 75% is when you give up the ownership, not the ownership, but the restrictions go to the property owners. We don't see anything from the developer other than the votes on changing the deed restrictions as far as that 75%. You don't see anything in reference to them putting up funds to be a member. They have total, they seem like they have total control without putting up any funds other than the construction of the project.
I just think it's an important enough and it's integral to what they're saying that we need to see that agreement.
Yeah, right. And he said he would give it to you tomorrow.
Well, we need to leave the public record open.
Yeah, I think we should leave the record open for that, yeah.
Leave the record open for what?
For the submission of that escrow agreement. Leave it open for like 10 days or something, I don't know, because we've got the holidays coming up.
Okay, I think we should review that, the membership agreement as well to see if it does have an exemption for the developer.
Well, I can do that. I mean, that's a recorded document. I can get the restrictive covenants and report back to you all and legally on what that says. I don't think you need to leave the
record
open for
that. Because
that
goes to the core of Mr. Abbott's debate about, you know, whether Wells would assume those covenants or not.
Yeah.
Well, I also have a concern that, you know, yes, we got 70 letters in support, but if there's 475 memberships out there and we got response from 70 of them, that translates only into 15%.
Well, typically, you know, most people that write in opposition, generally, in most applications. So most people don't write if they're in agreement.
Did we, along those lines, did that gentleman who spoke, who was a member of the Homeowners Association, did he submit additional documents?
The gentleman brought them up.
Okay, so we do have those.
Yeah,
okay.
he gave me a folder with all the letters.
Okay,
so
he said there was some duplicity in this
57. He wasn't sure if there wasn't some duplication.
I just want to. I never recalled him putting those in the record. I just want to make sure.
Now you walked out with him later. I thought I didn't see him having anything with him.
Okay.
Well, that in itself is pretty impressive. I mean, it's an off time of year. Many of those people are not even in the state, so it's really a pretty significant
pretty
number,
good,
especially in support, as Lawrence points out.
You're right.
But what happens if we said no, or council says no?
Here's what happens.
What's the likely scenario?
Well, we've looked at that because there's a court order that's like, I don't know, 18 pages long that establishes this receivership. The problem is, if it was, you know, Happy Acres somewhere, and they didn't comply with the RPC requirement, we'd violate them, probably maybe stop building permits. And we'd go to the Court of Chancery, either call a bond or go to the Court of Chancery and require them to do whatever they had to do. Here we've got a real detailed receivership order that we'd have to go, I think, ask permission first from the court to be able to enforce that ordinance. I mean, you know, and then I think we'd have to go enforce that ordinance. It's pretty tight on, you know, what Mr. Munn can do or not do without court approval, and that no expenditures can be made except for up to these amounts without further order of the court. And you know, we don't want you doing this and we don't want you doing that without further court order. You know, and the county, I think, would be bound by that just like everybody else.
Was the clubhouse mentioned in that?
I don't remember. Although in that first meeting we had with Mr. Munn, we said, you know, you're behind on taxes and sewer fees and bonds and you got to get this clubhouse addressed. I mean, because that the neighbors out there don't care if you haven't paid the taxes. We're getting heat because this clubhouse hasn't been built, you know. So
we've met with Mr. Munn, Mr. Anderson, about a half dozen times, and since they took over receivership. And a couple of meetings were lengthy just to get his viewpoint of the receivership so we would understand it. And the others would be more financial and bonding issues.
If I owned that development, I would be like those citizens. I'd be very concerned. I mean, I'd have to get legal counsel to see the nuances of it, but you know, if it went into foreclosure, you could see Wells Fargo selling the golf course, selling the amenities, and you having nothing, and having paid for a lot and had nothing. So there is a downside that you have to examine. You know, now, you know, if Mr. Abbott's argument is correct and the covenants of the development did not exempt the developer, then Wells Fargo probably assumes that they wrote the loans, but I would be very amazed if that was the case. You know, the bad part of this is that the developer was able to do a corporate, you know, borrowing against the $12 million that was paid. You know, that was a loophole for himself. And even though he committed to a bond, it was a corporate commitment and not a personal commitment to the bond. And so, again, was able to sidestep that. you know, so, you know, when times are going good, you don't have necessarily this happening to major developments. They have the pockets to keep going forward, but times aren't good, and so they've provided those loopholes to step aside, unfortunately.
And I would add that this, because of that receivership, certainly with regard to the past year since 2009, this is definitely a unique situation. I mean, it's not the same as, you know, Happy Acres developer coming in and saying, you know, I need more time to build my clubhouse, you know, period. I mean, literally, I'll attest to the fact that they got appointed in October of 2009. It took them a while to get their hands around what they had and didn't have. I mean, it was legitimate that they were working and getting things paid and prioritizing things. So, under a court order and court supervision with accounting requirements, you know, I mean, it's truly unique, and I don't think it creates a precedent for, you know, any other real development. It's just a really unique set of circumstances from the point of the receivership on, you know.
So we're going to leave the record open for to look at the membership.
Well, the restrictive
escrow,
covenants.
Restrictive covenant on the escrow account.
The escrow account, the restrictive covenants.
On the owners.
On the owners, those two things.
So I should throw away my motion for approval and just... As
if you had one over there. Come on now.
That was fast.
Yeah.
Mr. Chairman, concerning change of zone?
Yes.
Change of zone number 1697, application of Landtech Receiver Services, Inc. To modify the condition number 10. My motion is for deferral, leaving the record open. For 10 days after receipt of the escrow agreement and the restrictive covenants.
With analysis by me of the restrictive covenants, I guess is what you're looking for.
And to give the commission time for further consideration.
Second.
Gentlemen, we have a motion and a second. Mr. Johnson's motion for deferral, leaving the record open as stated by Mr. Johnson. All those in favor?
Aye.
Opposed. Motion carries.
Could you just 4-0. Run that by me one more time, make sure I got it right. Defer, leaving the record
defer
open for
action, leave
10
the record
after receipt for council
10 days
review.
After receipt of the escrow agreement and the restrictive covenants.
And for further consideration.
And for further consideration.
Okay, thanks.